Hello there. This is Bible Talk. This is a podcast where we're going to read the Bible.
And we're going to talk about it. It's a podcast for everyday people. And we're in Acts 22.
Okay. Brothers and fathers, listen now to my defense. When they heard him speak to them in Aramaic, they became very quiet. Why is that important, Damon?
Well, the fact that he is speaking in Aramaic means that he knows the ancient language of the Hebrews, or one of the ancient languages of the Hebrews, which means he's not that Egyptian guy who led the uprising of 4,000.
Right. Which, where did that come from? No, that was out of nowhere.
Misinformation. And if you don't know what we're talking about, you got to go back to the previous episode. But this is Paul, by the way, that is speaking.
Yes. So they heard him speaking in Aramaic. They became quiet. Then Paul said, I am a Jew born in Tarsus of Cilicia and brought up in this city. I studied under Gamaliel and was thoroughly trained in the law of our ancestors. I was just as zealous for God as any of you are today. I persecuted the followers of this way to their death. Goodness gracious. Arresting both men and women and throwing them into prison. As the high priests and all the council can themselves testify. I even obtained letters from them to their associates in Damascus and went there to bring these people as prisoners to Jerusalem to be punished. About noon, as I came near Damascus, suddenly a bright light from heaven flashed around me. I fell to the ground and heard a voice say to me, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Who are you, Lord? I asked. I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you are persecuting, he replied. My companions saw the light, but they did not understand the voice of him who was speaking to me. What shall I do, Lord? I asked. Get up, the Lord said, and go into Damascus. There you will be told all you have been assigned to do. My companions led me by the hand into Damascus because the brilliance of the light had blinded me. A man named Ananias came to see me. He was a devout observer of the law and highly respected by all the Jews living there. He stood beside me and said, Brother Saul, receive your sight. And at that very moment, I was able to see him. Then he said, The God of our ancestors has chosen you to know his will and to see the righteous one and to hear words from his mouth. You will be his witness to all people of what you have seen and heard. And now what are you waiting for? Get up, be baptized, and wash your sins away, calling on his name. When I returned to Jerusalem and I was praying at the temple, I fell into a trance and saw the Lord speaking to me. Quick, he said, leave Jerusalem immediately because the people here will not accept your testimony about me. Lord, I replied, these people know that I went from one synagogue to another to imprison and beat those who believe in you. And when the blood of your martyr, Stephen, was shed, I stood there giving my approval and guarding the clothes of those who were killing him. Then the Lord said to me, go, I will send you far away to the Gentiles.
Okay. So if some of this sounds familiar, it's because... it is. This is Paul retelling Acts chapter 9 and his conversion story.
Right.
And then giving us a little bit beyond what
it's
we got
cool.
in Acts chapter 9.
Yes.
Because in Acts chapter 9, after you get kind of those events, he just ends up, you know, going away and, you know, kind of getting acclimated to becoming a Christian. But
right.
here we learn that in verse 17... he was praying at the temple after this healing,
right.
and his sight was restored, and his conversion had taken place. And while there in the temple praying, he saw the Lord.
That's wild.
He saw Jesus again. Like, he had seen him once or heard his voice, at
right.
least once on the road to Damascus in Acts chapter 9. But also, he hears a little bit more from where the Lord tells him, leave Jerusalem immediately because the people here will not accept
right.
your testimony about me. So we get part of why Paul left so quickly in Acts chapter 9.
And focused on the Gentiles.
Because it was Jesus himself or the Lord himself who told him, go do it and go do it now. Right. These people are just not going to be open to your testimony about me. As amazing as it is, they're just not going to hear it.
Sure. You won't be the one that's going to get it done. Right.
And then he kind of pushes back at it a little bit and says, they know me. They know I was one of them. They know I used to chase after Christians and try to imprison them. And
what a testimony is that? Look at my change.
This should work.
Right.
And Jesus says in verse 21, go. I will send you far away to the Gentiles. That didn't, Paul's perspective didn't change Jesus's mind on the subject. Okay. So in verse 22, it says, the crowd listened to Paul until he said this, that last part. Then they raised their voices and shouted, rid the earth of him. He's not fit to live. The idea of his going to the Gentiles, that the Lord would tell him to go to preach to the Gentiles.
Oh, yeah.
To somebody who was a narrow-sighted observer of Judaism at this time.
Right.
Sounded like God was asking him to sin. Mm-hmm. It would be the equivalent of...
Because why would God want the Gentiles to be saved? They're wicked.
Why would he want the Israelites to be defiled?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So this would be the modern equivalent of someone come up to you and telling you that, God wanted you to go do something that was clearly and overtly known to be sinful.
Right.
You'd go, no way. God did never say that. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't say that. So that's kind of what it was like for Paul here. In verse 23, as they were shouting and throwing off their cloaks and flinging dust into the air, which was a sign of, disappointment, discouragement, controversy, the commander ordered that Paul be taken back into the barracks. He directed that he be flogged and interrogated in order to find out why the people were shouting at him like this. Now, the commander, the Roman commander, he's just trying to keep peace.
Right.
Why is that important for a Roman commander to keep peace?
Well, because you won't keep your head unless you do.
Why is that?
Because that is your purpose. Your purpose is to control the people that have been captured by the Roman Empire, keep them asunder, following your rules. And if you aren't capable of doing that, I'll simply replace you with somebody who can.
So to try and squelch things, he gets Paul back into the barracks. In verse 25, as they stretched him out to flog him, Paul said to the centurion standing there, is it legal for you to flog a Roman citizen who hasn't been found guilty? When the centurion, that's someone who's in charge of kind of a regiment or a group or a company of about 100, heard this, he went to the commander and reported it. Well, what are you going to do? He asked. This man is a Roman citizen.
Right.
The commander went to Paul and asked, tell me, are you a Roman citizen? Yes, I am, he replied. Then the commander said, I had to pay a lot of money for my citizenship. Paul said, I was born a citizen.
So there you go.
Verse 29, those who were about to interrogate him withdrew immediately.
That's a big deal, evidently.
Sure. It's essentially like, arresting someone here in America and then not reading them their rights. Mm-hmm. No matter what they did, if you don't read them their rights, they're likely to get away with it. Or it's going to be brought up during trial and the case may be thrown out.
Well, and I think it's interesting because what we see unfolding here is a revelation to the emphasis that the Roman Empire put on order and laws. Like, okay, so you're a Roman citizen. You brought yourself into this city. You stirred things up. Enjoy jail. But for a Roman citizen to be arrested, have their rights denied, flogged without a trial and being found guilty, that just went against everything that the Roman Empire, like as bad as they were, stood for. They're like, no, we're about law and order and following these rules. And once they realized that they hadn't followed their own rules, they're like, okay, we're alarmed.
Yeah. So they withdraw immediately. It says the commander himself was alarmed when he realized that he had put Paul, a Roman citizen, in chains. You want to pick it up in verse 30?
Yes. The commander wanted to find out exactly why Paul was being accused by the Jews. So the next day, he released him and ordered the chief priests and all the members of the Sanhedrin to assemble. Then He brought Paul and had him stand before him.
And we're going to roll right into chapter 23 and hear Paul's testimony, essentially.
Okay. Paul looked straight at the Sanhedrin and said, "My brothers, I have fulfilled my duty to God in all good conscience to this day." At this, the high priest Ananias ordered those standing near Paul to strike him on the mouth. Then Paul said to him, "God will strike you, you whitewashed wall. You sit there to judge me according to the law, yet you yourself violate the law by commanding that I be struck." Those who were standing near Paul said, "How dare you insult God's high priest?" Paul replied, "Brothers, I did not realize that he was the high priest, for it is written..."
Didn't have his name badge on.
"Do not speak evil about the ruler of your people." Then Paul, knowing that some of them were Sadducees and the others Pharisees, called out to the Sanhedrin, "My brothers, I am a Pharisee, descended from Pharisees. I stand on trial because of the hope of the resurrection of the dead."
All right, so really quick.
Yeah.
Some Sadducees, some Pharisees. What's the difference between the two? And I think a little hint to that is found in verse 6 there when Paul talks about resurrection of the dead.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting creative tact that he's using here, because essentially you've got these two groups of people that are now unified to your demise, but if he can divide them...
He may get somewhere.
He might get somewhere.
So the Sadducees don't believe in the resurrection of the dead.
Correct.
But the Pharisees do. And Paul is standing there on trial because of his hope in the resurrection of the dead, or so he tells them.
Right.
He's got a new revelation. To Paul's credit, once he received a new revelation, he went with it without hesitation. So he was a Pharisee at one point. But once he could no longer deny that Jesus was the Christ, that he was the Messiah, and it was Jesus that sent him to the Gentiles,
right,
he wasn't going to argue with it. He was going to take that new revelation and run forward. Where the rest of the Pharisees were having a hard time was that they couldn't seem to do what Paul was so proficient at, which is take that revelation and run.
Right. When he had said this, the resurrection of the dead comment, a dispute broke out between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. The Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, and that there are neither angels nor spirits, but the Pharisees believe all these things. There was a great uproar, and some of the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, stood up and argued vigorously. "We find nothing wrong with this man, because he agrees in the resurrection of the dead." The dispute, we find nothing wrong with this man, they said. "What if a spirit or an angel has spoken to him?" The dispute became so violent that the commander was afraid Paul would be torn to pieces by them. He ordered the troops to go down and take him away from them by force and bring him into the barracks. The following night, the Lord stood near Paul and said, "Take courage. As you have testified about me in Jerusalem, so you must also testify in Rome."
Okay. Then in verse 12, it says, "The next morning, some Jews formed a conspiracy and bound themselves with an oath to not eat or drink until they had killed Paul." More than 40 men were involved in this plot.
Wow.
They went to the chief priests and elders and said, "We have taken a solemn oath not to eat anything until we have killed Paul. Now then, you and the Sanhedrin petition the commander to bring him before you on the pretext that we're wanting more accurate information about this case. And while he's out in front of you, I guess we're going to kill him, right? We are ready to kill him before he gets here." Also, before he even arrived
for the trial.
They planned to assassinate him. Verse 16, "But when the son of Paul's sister," Paul's got a sister, "heard of this plot, he went into the barracks and he told Paul about it. Then Paul called one of the centurions and said, 'Take this young man to the commander. He has something to tell him.' So he took him to the commander. The centurion said, 'Paul, the prisoner, sent for me and asked me to bring you this young man because he has something to tell you. The commander took the young man by the hand, drew him aside and asked, what is it you want to tell me? He said, some Jews have agreed to ask you to bring Paul before the Sanhedrin tomorrow on the pretext of wanting more accurate information. Don't give in to them, because more than 40 of them are waiting in ambush for him. They have taken an oath not to eat or drink until they've killed him. They are ready now, waiting for your consent to their request. The commander dismissed the young man with this warning, don't tell anyone that you reported this to me. Then he called two of his centurions and ordered them, get ready a detachment of 200 soldiers, to outnumber the 40, 70 horsemen, and 200 spearmen to go to Caesarea at 9 tonight. We're not doing any assassinations on my watch, he said. Verse 24, provide horses for Saul so that he may be taken safely to Governor Felix. He kicks it up a notch. He wrote a letter as follows, and we'll get into that letter next time, which starts there in verse 26. But as we put a wrap on this podcast, Paul is now in the hands of and at the mercy of the system.
Right.
Because if he's left into the hands of the Pharisees and Sadducees, their vehement disagreement over this doctrinal issue of resurrection is likely going to lead to Paul's death.
Right.
He's got 40 people waiting to kill him, and who've taken a serious vow, by the way.
Right.
Which I always wondered, what's going to happen to these guys? They said they wouldn't eat or drink anything. They took a solemn vow. They're not going to get at Paul. So
right.
Do they never eat or drink anything again, or do they break their vow? It doesn't ever say, I don't think. But
it doesn't. But what happens?
I mean,
what happens when you break a vow?
Well, it's not good. Is it better or worse than starving to death? That's for you to figure out.
Right,
okay.
Right.
That's the end of the podcast.
Okay.
Episode.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we'd like to leave you with this thought.
Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves, but do what it says.